Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
I'm Terry Rotaro, the chef in a hat.
And I'm Katie O.
And you are Katie O. Nice to see you all. Chef owner of several of Seattle's finest restaurants, including the one we're above here at Lola. And also, if you're going to see Evan Hansen in the next few weeks, you can stop in at the Carlisle Room because across the street from the Paramount Theater. Super fun.
And it sounds like a very, very popular show. There is no seats left. They're going to have to add at least another week behind that show.
Yeah, I saw it, I want to say the second week after it opened on Broadway, or maybe the eighth on Broadway in New York. Quite spectacular, especially at that time, the lead singer, who I recognize from Pitch Perfect. I can't tell you his name right now, but he was the guy in Pitch Perfect.
Oh, Tom, your knowledge of musical theater is unparalleled.
Yeah, I know. It gives me the chills myself.
Me too.
Yeah. I'll have to have a moment of silence. Thank you for Carol Channing, who died this week, one of my Broadway heroes.
Hello, Dolly.
I've probably told you this story before, but I got to cook for Carol Channing one time. You know, I'm a musical buff. I'm not buff, but I like musicals.
Yes.
I'm trying to get buff.
You're buff on the inside.
I'm more like a buffalo. Anyway, I was at the Hotel DuPont in Wilmington, Delaware, a chef like three floors under the Playhouse Theater, which was Wilmington, Delaware's Paramount Theater, right? Mm-hmm. Same idea. And I got the word that I was going to cook for Carol Channing, who was on the road there in Hello, Dolly. So not only did I get to see her perform it, I got to cook for her. And when they brought down, they sent somebody down with her food, and it was a case of IV water, that sterilized water. Remember, it used to be in glass bottles. Now it's in plastic bags.
But
it used to be in glass bottles, and a case of organic zucchini. And that's what I made for her breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Steamed zucchini.
Any salt? Nothing?
And, you know, she's like Tina. She's about the biggest as a twig. And, nothing.
Nothing. Just some sterilized water and zucchini.
There you go.
All right.
I loved her. I was the only one. When she came to the Paramount in Hello, Dolly, I gave her like a standing ovation after a number. I looked around. I was the only one in the whole theater standing. The woman was like, she was like 80 years old or 75 years old.
A true fan.
You deserve a standing ovation after playing Dolly Levi for 50 years.
That's right.
Anyway. Okay, this show is packed. We're drinking south of the border with winemaker Santiago Lopez Viana. We're going to host a dinner party using the same ingredient in every course.
That's right.
I'm assuming it's at your place.
It is at my place.
I love that.
Okay. And who are we going to have?
Well, we'll find out.
We'll find out later. Our favorite taste of the week, you'll never, ever guess what mine was because I'm not a fan, but I loved it.
Beets?
Nope. You'll never guess.
Okay.
And of course,
beets was a good one.
Of course, the tasty trivia is going to wrap up our second hour. And I'm feeling kind of in the middle of the road today.
Oh, you're not
feeling... I'm not overconfident. Uh-huh. I'm not underconfident.
You woke up too early to
be
too confident.
I got up at 2:30 this morning, so like I've already worked out.
We'll see what happens as the show...
I feel like I got a head start on all of you guys.
Yeah, when the show goes on, I feel like you'll get a feeling one way or the next. Let's do some ordinary to extraordinary. This is where you take some ordinary dishes and you make them extraordinary. The first one being couscous. Can be plain, can kind of be boring. So how do you make couscous extraordinary?
Well, let's get it straight right away because a lot of people don't realize it's just pasta.
Right.
That's right.
It's
little rolled, sand-like pasta.
People think that it's a grain of some sort, but it's not. It's just pasta. And it's like a little bit of a grit. Looks a little bit like corn grits, right?
Uh-huh.
10 minutes
in boiling water and it's done.
Yeah.
As in you take boiling water, you pour it right over it, you put a piece of plastic wrap on that bowl and the couscous is done.
Mm-hmm.
I think the secret from the couscous is it's a great vessel. You can put saffron, you can put all kind of herbs in it.
Mm-hmm.
You can also just put a nice amount of olive oil, fork it out gently so it's all fluffy. And then from that, you just add vegetable, roasted vegetable, and couscous. You can keep something very light and vegetarian this time of the year. It's delicious. I mean, I'm a big fan of, if you do roasted parsnip, carrots, and onions, and you put all that in your couscous, it becomes the vessel for a nice piece of meat if you want to put a... braised lamb or something like this on top of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit like rice. You know, you're utilized in the same way. Although you wouldn't really pan fry it. At least I haven't seen it done that way, but you could. But to make it extraordinary, I think you really have to punch the tomato sauce, right?
Mm-hmm.
Typically, couscous is served with maybe a tagine of lamb shank or with dates and almonds.
Or chicken.
A little tomato and olive broth. But really punch that broth up with harissa, bright green olives, squeezes of lemon and lemon zest. You could use preserved lemons if you like, but I like a fresh lemon better than the preserved lemon. It's a very unique taste. So that's how I would punch it up.
All right. How about some clam chowder? I've been seeing a lot of pictures on Instagram of people going razor clamming right now. That's a big thing. Would you take some of those razor clams and make a chowder?
Yeah, I would definitely do it, but I wouldn't do it at the beginning. I would sweat my onions in butter, obviously, and then I would add diced potatoes, leeks, and I would bring that down to a sweat, put some nice little fish stock and some cream, reduce the whole thing down, no flour added, no starch added, just reduce the whole thing down, and then sear your clam in a super hot pan. Sear your clam, your razor clam cut in pieces, sear them, and then drop them in the clam chowder. That would give it a nice personality.
I think to make it extraordinary, though, wouldn't it be kind of good to, you know, there's different parts of the razor clam, right? There's that tender part. I don't know the terms for the different parts, but there's parts that are more tough, which you could braise in a clam broth and just kind of just cook them down to a more tender. And then there's other bits that you might want to just chop and sear really quickly, and then garnish your clam chowder with it. As far as making clam chowder extraordinary.
Yeah, the brown meat definitely would suit to that, because it's a little bit more like sweet bread, and it's got that texture a little bit more softer.
Yeah.
So you sear that, and you cut it, and use it exactly as a garnish on the middle of the plate. That would be good.
So I think sometimes in clam chowder, you're kind of looking around for the clams.
Yeah.
Or you're just utilizing the clam broth for the clam flavor. Mm-hmm. It'd be really nice to have a hot piece of seared clam right there in your face, with some good ocean flavor.
Yum. Fortifying that clammy flavor. Mm-hmm. That sounds great.
Sounds extraordinary.
It does. You completed the task.
Coming up, let us share our pro tips on making a great salad. Right, Chef?
Absolutely.
Let us.
Let us, please.
Okay, on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Was that you, Sarah? We are back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show from the Hot Stove Society. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And I'm Katie O.
And we're continuing to tell you about our 99 reasons why you should go out of your way to either come downtown or stay downtown. Like, stay downtown being you work here and then stay late, so you miss all this via gloom traffic.
That's right.
So we have several reasons. We have the Big Bertha Soyu Boilermaker over at Tanaka-san. Who knew? Demolition dumplings at Tanaka-san, and Honker, a pot sticker plate, including pork dumplings, a side of rice, and a Rainier tall boy for just $11. So we have all these specials at all of our joints.
And all of these can be accompanied by some very nice slushies.
Exactly, sake slushies. So if you go to tomdouglas.com, you can see the 99 reasons why, and they're all like little specials at each of our joints, and they're fun. There's some fun names in there.
It is fun, and you know what's terrible? Driving in traffic when you're hungry.
Yeah.
And so nothing there is Henson playing.
I was going to say and sober, but that's not.
Not that's not.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing. That was a joke.
Yeah, I get it. We get it. I think everybody got it.
I'm going to get letters, and I don't mean to be that way.
Tom, now that the Paramount is playing Henson, it's also another reason to stay in town.
So it starts on the 23rd of January, and of course this show is now airing on the 26th, I would say.
There 26th and 27th.
So let us entertain you with salads.
Yes.
All right. So let's talk about... we're going to share our pro tips, as we like to do, because we are very full of ourselves.
So what do you look for in a salad? Because there is many different explanations of salad. I had one recently in a restaurant in Seattle that was called a Caesar salad, and it was the most disappointing salad I've had in a long time.
What made it disappointing?
It was...
Why was it off?
It was supposed to be a Caesar salad, and it was cut about half an inch long pieces of lettuce.
So it's chopped romaine.
Chopped. And there was... The croutons felt like they were bought somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
And like they were not made fresh on premises. There was no anchovies. There was no life in that salad. I was like, oh, my God, how do you make a Caesar salad that doesn't punch out?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just lame. As you know, when you get something that's lame, it felt lame.
So what would you do to fix that? How would you or what's your pro tip on making that salad better?
Well, first of all, I would keep the leaves of lettuce a little bit bigger so there's a little bit more texture to the salad.
You often see a Caesar salad with whole leaves of the center of the romaine. You like the whole leaf?
I don't need it to be whole. I like that.
Yeah,
but okay. I don't need it to be whole, but okay. I definitely don't need to be a quarter inch big.
You don't need an ABC, already been chewed lettuce.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it looked like. And the dressing. I mean, it's not that hard to make something that has a little punch. You have to think. You're putting something on the lettuce. Lettuce is pretty bland of itself. It doesn't have much power. You need to put something that has a little personality on that. If you make a dressing that's very bland, you're not going to test anything out of your lettuce. So you need to give it a little style, a little, you know, tarragon, a little egg, you know, make a nice little dressing. But put some anchovies in there that gives it that umami that just totally dresses up the whole salad. And those croutons, don't buy croutons. Make your damn croutons. I mean, that's ridiculous. Buying croutons is like having a... I don't know either. I'm not going to say what I think, but
I think it's kind of nice in a Caesar salad to have a little bit of a warm crouton that says that you've just made it, and it's real oily and herby and lots of salt and pepper.
Something that has a little, you know, so when you chew on it, you don't feel like it's a dry piece of bread that's been made 2 months ago and it's in a bag, you know.
I think this is where, like, salads maybe sometimes get a bad rap. They're either not made with a certain level of love and care that maybe we give to proteins.
Right.
And then on the other hand, you have a whole other host of people that are eating salads purely for maybe a weight loss solution. Mm-hmm. So you get these kind of anemic salads. So I think that there are ways that we can help people make really delicious salads.
You can always say dressing on the side. You know, if you go to a restaurant, you just say dressing on the side. At home, you just don't put the dressing in if that's what you're looking for as a diet reason. But in most cases, when you order a salad, you're not expecting to have something that's not tasty.
I would just start, if you're going to make a salad great again, my pro tip is go away from all that packaged, not just necessarily pre-packaged, but all like the spring mix, you know, and all these kind of baby things kind of just swamp together with no personality, and it's just a big wad of different kinds of greens on your plate. So I would think about a salad from the head of the lettuce. Okay, let's start with gem romaine. Let's start with a bib lettuce, right? Okay, so now we're going to move on from there. What's going to go with that?
Watercress
might be interesting.
Right now,
blanched green beans might be interesting, right?
Yeah.
A little toasted shiitake mushroom.
Yeah.
So you got a little crunch in there, right?
Caramelized fried shallots.
Crispy shallots would be delicious in there. Start to build a salad out in your head of all the different textures and flavors. Maybe a crisp wedge or baton of Honeycrisp apple. Toasted nuts. So you're starting to build your salad as a really important part of your dinner.
And
you've thought about, and if it fits with the entree coming up next.
And it's not the more the merrier, and you don't have to put all those items in it, but just some of them create texture and added flavor to your salad. Mm-hmm. So
let's just go back again. Now it doesn't even have to be lettuce. Let's do an avocado grapefruit with crispy chorizo and fried olives. Now we've got a different kind of salad, right?
Whoa. That's totally different.
It is totally different.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a salad.
Yeah.
And it's just got little bits of chorizo crumbs, like you might use bacon crumbs.
And you can use grain for base. You can use all kinds of different things. I mean, there's...
I tend not to use grain unless it's an entree salad.
Okay.
I tend not to use grain in, like, a starter salad.
Right.
And, of course, in Europe, they tend to have salads after the entree, right?
Correct.
So then you wouldn't use grains there either. But as an entree salad, absolutely. A grain base, a green tea noodle base, you know, all sorts of soba salads are fun. But you really have to think.
I think the dressing is also a very important part in salads. You know, you can make your dressing ahead of time, keep it in the fridge, but a simple lemon juice, mustard, olive oil shaken really well incorporated, and then you have a wonderful dressing, salt and pepper, and you're done.
Well, in this time of year, there's so much beautiful citrus that's available.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a time to really kind of explore that aisle of the produce section and see what you can do in terms of citrus.
Passion fruit, grapefruit.
Mm-hmm. There's some salad wreckers out there, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
So there's rancid oils. There's oxidized vinegars. All these things. You bought the beautiful fresh salad, and now you're putting a year-old vinegar that's been on your cupboard shelf, right, for a year. Don't do it. Buy smaller jars and buy them more often. I know they're a little bit more expensive, but they're fresher and better. And all that effort you're making, you might as well follow
and,
through.
And nuts. Nuts are a big
component. Keep them in your freezer, yeah. Right? So going back to your Caesar, I think that the biggest mistake in Caesar is people try to make a mayonnaise dressing, and that just weighs down a Caesar salad. I was taught 40 years ago by a guy who used to make Caesar salads at restaurants around Seattle. It starts with an egg, right?
Got egg
lots
yolk.
Of mustard and lemon juice are the really the brighteners of your
exactly.
dressing. And then a little Tabasco.
But
everything's about brightening. A little fresh garlic, but not too much.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of anchovy, but not too much. It's not supposed to be an anchovy salad.
No, no.
The anchovy is supposed to disappear into, like, what is that? But because we tend to think more is better, we put too many anchovies mm-hmm. in, right? So those are the kind of things that will brighten any salad. Fresh vinegars, fresh lemon juice, lemon zest. Those are the salad extraordinaries,
mm-hmm.
right? The
yep.
ones that. But when you wreck your own salad, you've done the shopping, you've paid your money, and then you go home and put on rancid oil or old vinegar. It's just shame on you, right? Taste it, move on.
That's right.
Dump it down the drain, recycle the bottle.
Don't put the oil in the drain. Put it in the recycled can.
There you go.
Or in the compost can.
All right, we're going to go drinking south of the border. Not many people know that there's a big wine region down in the Baja area, south of the border, with winemaker Santiago Lopez Viana on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. You're in it. Live and in person, right here at the Hot Stove Society. I'm Tom Douglas.
Live and in person, Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
And we have Santiago Lopez here. He's a winemaker from south of the border, Mexico, to be exact. And I think that we should probably start from the beginning, Santiago, and talk about the valleys that you're in. I was in Mexico City, and there were wine lists down there, literally only Mexican wine. It surprised me. Amazed. I didn't realize the depth of wineries in that area. So tell us a little bit about who you are, where you come from, and that sort of thing.
Well, first off, I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Mm-hmm.
The Mexico wine scene has really been developing for a long time, but it's had like an abrupt explosion over the last like 10, 15 years. We were just talking about this off air. The oldest running winery in Mexico is from 1888, so it's about 130
wow.
years old.
Mm.
But the oldest winery in the whole continent was set up in Mexico in the 1500s. So that's the oldest winery in America. I started as a winemaker in 2010. I did my studies from UC Davis. We started with a family project in Valle de Guadalupe, which is where probably about 75% of wines in Mexico are being produced mm-hmm. right now. And we're in Seattle right now, so it's been a pretty fun ride.
And I know you're here because you're doing a dinner of tomorrow night at Cantina Leña, our little restaurant by the Cinerama Theater, but it's already sold out, so that's a good thing. But the Valle de Guadalupe, I mean, you see many, many wines from there and all sorts of price points. It has a little bit like the Napa Valley or Sonoma Valley where there's both the high-end wines and the low-end more everyday wines.
Yes, we have lots of versatility at mm-hmm. this point in time in Valle de Guadalupe. You're going to find lots of different varietals, lots of different price points, lots of different styles as well. Mm-hmm. There's not like a fixed style that you're going to find. You have lots of really good winemakers trying to do their best to define the region in itself. Nobody's really copying each other in mm-hmm. terms of style or, mm-hmm. or like, oh, he nailed down this wine, I'm going to do the same thing. Everyone's all over the place, and that's given us lots of variety in wines.
Mm-hmm. So it's not like a Barbaresco or Barolo where you have one grape varietal and everyone kind of works off the same thing and
right.
shows their talents.
Not at all. We're still too young as a region to just get fixed on one grape or two grapes or
very
one style.
Small.
So usually you hear people talking about Tempranillo and Nebbiolo. I really like Syrah. I think Syrahs out of the valley are coming out amazingly as well. But there's still so much more to discover and learn from our region that, I mean, we're in that process.
I think that sounds really exciting, that creative freedom that a lot of the old world, you know, wines just can't really break away from because that's what they're known for. And so creative freedom, this is exciting.
Yeah. Is the what is the soil like? Because to me, I'm picturing, I've never been to Baja California, but I'm picturing volcanic ground. Is that everywhere?
Well, I can talk about us. My vineyard, personally, it's mostly sandy soils.
Oh.
We're inside of a ravine in a canyon, so we get all this deposit from the sides of the hills, and it's also water pathway into the valley. So we get all that sand that comes down with the water. But most of the valley, I can probably say it's clay.
Okay, clay. Okay.
Yeah, clay, mixture of clay with a little bit of sand as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So you brought a wine with you today, and can you tell us what it is and why you brought this particular wine?
Sure. This is actually probably the wine that we're best known for right now. Mm-hmm. The name of the wine is O Positivo, like O Positive. It's mm-hmm. actually a family joke because the first time we came out with this wine, we did not agree on the name of the wine. So, you know, in family businesses, usually the easier decisions are the hardest ones to make. So it first came out just as Cabernet Syrah, and then one day we were joking about putting blood, sweat, and tears into the family business. Everyone in my family is an O positive blood type, and I mean the color of the wine is like a deep purple, you know.
Yeah, it's very dark.
So
very
we just
deep.
Thought it'd be aptly named O positive, like our blood type.
Yeah. Oh my god, that's really funny.
I must applaud you for not. It's very well balanced, and I think this is a very beautiful wine. You could age nicely.
Thank you. This blend is a Cabernet Syrah 50-50. It has a 12 months of American oak. And this is actually, it's our best-selling wine right now. We always have to make a big effort to store away our historic reserve to have for future years because we usually tend to run through our whole inventory in the first, like, year and a half after we put it out.
It's money. We get it.
Yes. That's right. So, yeah, so this is actually one of only seven Mexican wines that has ever been listed at a 3-Michelin restaurant wine list. So we're really proud of that. And yeah, we're making our way into Seattle right now. Hopefully more people will be able to try this and get a better sense of what Mexican wines taste like.
Is this in wine stores in Seattle or not yet?
We are in the process. I don't know. I have to ask because I know we're...
Is it? Yes.
It is. Yes.
Okay, cool.
We're getting a yes.
Hey, this is why you're the winemaker, not the...
Exactly.
You have the businessman with you.
Exactly.
The name of the winery is called Solar Fortune.
That is right, Solar Fortune. It's another word for a rural property, so like a solar. I don't know if it translates properly into English. And Fortune, inside of Valle de Guadalupe, there's a bunch of smaller regions. The region where our vineyard is located is called Francisco Zarco, which was a mid-1800s political journalist. And his nickname his pseudonym for his articles was Fortune. So Solar Fortune basically means Francisco Zarco Ranch. Hmm. Like we're 100% state grown. So we really want to bring attention back to our location, our soil type, our microclimate and our terroir.
So you grow and you brew at the same time.
Yes.
Oh, you not brew, but make the wine. That's very cool.
Yes.
So this is a Cabernet Syrah blend. What else do you have in the marketplace here?
Oh, well, we're working with Mourvèdre and Petit Verdot. We're doing different types of blends with that, single varietals. We have a top shelf Cabernet, which is fantastic. It's called Elixir Cordis, which means elixir of the heart. We also carry Rosé made out of Mourvèdre, sort of Provence style, not exactly the same thing, but it's really nice. And then we have our single varietal Syrah, our top shelf house blend, which is a blend of our four different red grapes. Like I said at the beginning, there are no rules in Mexico, so we're trying to experiment to see what works. And in the end, it's really the customer, the ones that tells us what they end up liking, and that's what we continue to produce.
Yeah, exactly.
Any white grapes?
Not yet. We actually just planted our white grape vineyard. Like I said, we don't buy any grapes. So we planted Viognier and Marsan.
Okay.
So that's what we're... In that's three or four years, that's what we're expecting to produce.
Excellent.
Amy told me the wines, our restaurants that serve them, I know there's probably many restaurants around town, but from our perspective, the Solar Fortune wines are available at Brave Horse Tavern, Cantina Lena, Home Remedy, and the Carlisle Room. If you're interested and you're out and about, you should check those out on the wine list. The along with the wines from Mexico, the foods of Mexico on a different plateau are kind of taking the Americas by storm, it seems to me. I can't remember the name of the chef from Puyo.
Enrique Olvera. Yeah.
He seems like he's doing really good in New York since he's opened there. Do you guys follow him? Is it exciting to see?
Well, see, the whole Mexican food for the longest time was considered, and I'm just paraphrasing here what I've heard from other people, like... low quality food, and over the last couple of years it's just taken off, and it's fantastic. Like, we're really happy that people are starting to discover true, authentic Mexican food because it's so different to what many times people get in other countries. There's so much, just like we were talking about the wines, there's so much variety when it comes to Mexican food, so many different styles. If you go to the northern parts where Valle de Guadalupe is, we have this line of, it's called Baja Med cuisine. And then if you go to like Sinaloa, you have the seafood in a very different acidic way. You have all the moles and all the food in Yucatan on the southeastern part of Mexico.
Yeah, Santa Cruz.
There's so much variety in Mexican food. And what we usually get outside of Mexico is just a small part of that.
Yeah.
But it's like hopefully more and more of that we'll get out here. And, you know, just like the wines, you know, it's a matter of trying different things and pairing them together. And
so they don't have any wine region in the Yucatan Peninsula, right? That's too warm, too tropical.
Yes. The main wine producing regions are Valle de Guadalupe, which I'm going to take this opportunity to invite people to go visit. It's a fantastic place. It still has got that very rural feeling to it. We're only about 60 miles south of the border with San Diego, so it's a really easy drive down there. And then we also produce wines in Coahuila, so that's like north, mid-north in Mexico, and then sort of like the bottom part of Mexico, like San Luis Potosí, Zacatecas, Querétaro. But that's like smaller amounts of wine.
Just curious, from all the different dinners that we've done with winemakers over the years, if you had to pair with this particular wine that we're drinking right now, say a food from the area of where it's grown, right? Okay. From the Valle de Guadalupe, that part. Is there a food that's a natural pairing?
I mean, I don't know if I just call it a natural pairing. This is such a well-rounded, well-balanced wine that I think is very versatile and very easy to pair. I would go for a little bit of structure on the food, but not too intense. Like they can't really go with like a heavy, greasy steak. We have a restaurant at our vineyard, and we actually pair this. We have a barbecue octopus tostada with some yellow corn, and it works very, very well with that.
Interesting.
Wow. I can see that, the smokiness from the grill and that tenderness that you get from cooked octopus.
Yeah, slightly sweet from the barbecue as well, not too much. It works very well.
That sounds good, yeah.
Well, thank you, Santiago Lopez of Solar Fortune Winery from the Valle de Guadalupe in northern Mexico. We appreciate your time. Good luck on your dinner tomorrow night. We think it's going to be a blast
for
Chef Paco. Up next, we're going to use a secret ingredient in a dinner party for every course at Katie's house on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. It's time for dinner. I'm starving. We haven't had our sandwiches yet from the Dahlia Bakery, and Katie's begging us to cook at our house.
I am begging you. Yes, we are going to do a dinner party at my house. And as we like to do, we're going to take one ingredient and we're going to use it in every single course. And by we, I mean the two of you. And this week,
it's a big we.
Yeah, it's a big we. It's the royal we.
Are you going to do the dishes maybe?
More than happy to do the dishes.
Good.
More than happy to do the dishes and keep your wine glasses full. How about that?
I like it.
Okay.
You know, at my house, I do the dishes and Jackie does the laundry. That's our trade.
Is that the trade? Interesting trade. I like that. I like that you have a system going. Today, our special ingredient is going to be celery. Are you thrilled?
I'm very excited. Tom, you look like somebody
well,
just hit you.
Well, my guess is I've just guessed who the dinner guest is going to be because she's celery all the time, celery.
She's on
Gwyneth
celery.
Paltrow.
That's correct. That's correct. I actually love celery. I love
it
in salads. I think I like it braised. I think it's a bit of an underrated vegetable, though it's gaining steam in the celery juice world. But I think you guys can probably do something a little bit more interesting with this humble, humble vegetable.
Absolutely. I'm going to jump in.
Go ahead.
Is that okay with you, Chef?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay. So you're going to make use some of Dr. Brown's celery tonic.
Delicious.
And I'm going to add a little...
Can you say that? I'm sorry, one more time?
Dr. Brown's celery tonic. You find it in a lot of Jewish delis.
Yeah.
So that's going to be my base for my cocktail. And I'm going to add some blood orange juice to it. We're not going to make a V8 out of it. We're just going to add some blood orange juice.
It's a little sweet, that celery tonic.
Well, that one is because it's got sugar added, but it doesn't have to be quite as. You can make your own. Anyway, blood orange juice. So I have this little thing that's going to accept vodka or gin beautifully. And then I'm going to garnish it with ants on a log.
What?
You know what that is?
Ants on a log?
Absolutely. I'm going to take my celery stick, I'm going to take my peanut butter. I'm going to put some curry powder in it. I'm going to macerate my cherries or my raisins or my currants, whatever size that you want to use for your ants on a log. And I'm going to macerate those in chai. And then we're going to chai tea.
Uh-huh.
And then we're just going to put them right on top. And we're going to have a celery blood orange tonic with ants on a log.
A little after school snack.
That is so that is so left field. I love it.
Have you not noticed that that's where I play?
Yes. That's always where I throw the ball.
All right, Terry. So we've...
So do you think Gwenny will like that? I call it Gwenny because I have a picture of Gwenny on my wall.
I bet
she's saying to Tom, she's saying, you should come over to my house for dinner.
She seems like someone that would want a non-traditional peanut butter. Like, instead of peanut butter, like a cashew butter.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think she's down. Mm-hmm. I think she'd like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Terry Rotrow.
Well, you know, we're talking celery, so I'm going to use celery root, that famous bowl. And when you walk in front of the vegetable stand, everybody looks at it and go, what the heck is that?
Mm-hmm.
And walk right by and don't pick it up. You know, I love celery root. I think it's got a beautiful flavor. It's delicate and makes a wonderful salad. So Dungeness crab salad, we were talking about grapefruit earlier that are in beautiful season. Pink grapefruit, celery root julienne, make a nice salad with that and a creamy dressing.
What are you going to make your dressing out of?
So it's going to be creme fraiche, grapefruit juice, a little tarragon chopped, salt and pepper. That's it. Very simple.
That's it.
And mix that with the celery root. Put the segments of grapefruit, pink grapefruit,
mm-hmm.
all mixed into it, as well as with the crab. Put the crab on top. And I think Gwyneth is going to be very excited.
Mm-hmm.
She'd be like, ooh, that's delicious.
Ooh, chef.
Ooh, chef.
Yeah.
I think she does that, actually.
Chef.
I think she does that.
I think so, too.
Ooh, chef.
All right. How are you going to make celery a main course, Tom?
Well, I'm assuming that Gwyneth is bringing her new husband, so I'm going to put on Coldplay.
Probably.
Coldplay during the entree.
Wow, that feels...
Yeah, we're going to just dig right
they
in
had
there.
A, they now, had you a wanna, conscious you want, uncoupling. I you, think they're on good terms.
You
so
want to tell us a bit
this.
More, because I'm not aware she has a new husband. Who's the husband?
She's had a new husband, I think, or a new boyfriend, at least.
Yeah, but, he's a director or something.
Her old husband used to be the lead singer creator. For Coldplay. So I just thought, we'll have a little remembrance time during the entree.
That's nice.
He probably hasn't... whispered to her lately.
That's very thoughtful of yes. you to the guest.
I'm going to make an old TD classic. TD, that would be me.
Mm-hmm.
I like talking about me in the third person.
And by
you know what TD
only.
Would do?
Yes.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah. WTD. WWTD. What would TD? Yep. What would TD do? Oh man.
That's a lot.
There's a lot of D's and
yeah,
a lot of W's.
Anyway, letters there.
An old classic of mine is Terry's going to just want to. I don't know. He'll hug me or he'll vomit, one or the other.
Hmm.
I make a little black cod with caraway seed and minced celery in papillote with butter.
Yeah. No, of course.
And you get that licorice-y flavor off the celery. You could do it with, star anise, but you could do a little grating of star anise, or you could do it with sweet anise, fennel, right?
You could put a little pastis.
But anyway, I just put a little bit of sliced celery. And I put a little bit of beaten egg and some caraway seeds in the packet, in the papillote, lots of butter, and I steam it. And it's just a beautiful, I love steamed black cod. It's such a rich fish. It steams beautifully. You can't really overcook it.
Uh-huh.
And so I like the way the celery comes out.
Wait, I'm curious. What does the egg do? Does the egg also...
It's more of my Japanese angle on it. Kind of not... it's just... It just sets in there.
Yeah,
it's delicious.
It's very,
sounds very healthy.
Are you going to hug me or are you going to vomit?
Oh, no, I'm totally with you.
Okay,
I like
come
that.
Over here. Just give me a little hug.
I'll give you. Hold on one second.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very nice. In papillote, nice. In honor of my friend, Chef
this is,
in the
This
chateau.
Is the guy who doesn't like French, right?
I love
First thing
French.
He does is cook a French dish. I like it.
You know, I'm coming around to French cooking.
Yeah, no, I see
that.
It's
taken me 40 years.
It's called maturity. That's
I know.
Okay.
I totally get,
I get it.
I totally get it.
I had that when I was 15.
I still don't make big, heavy stocks, though. You could see how light that dish would have been, the cod and
sure.
papillote. Very light. Yeah.
All right, Terry, you're up. It's time to make a celery dessert.
We're not going to do dessert. We're going to do, because I'm not picturing celery in my dessert yet. But
oh, I am.
I'm going to do, you are? Good for you. I can do celery confit, but
Katie has some ideas here.
No, I would like to hear both. I would like to hear a savory
So I'm going to do
a
goat cheese and lovage tart. Lovage is, I don't know if any of you know this, but it's those leaves that are actually from the celery family, but much more intense than celery. So you don't want to take those leaves and put them in your mouth like it's a lettuce. It's a very powerful thing. So it's used in stocks, and it cooks very fast. So you don't need to put it for 2 hours. Just put it for the last 10 minutes in your stock, and you'll have the flavor out. Mm-hmm. But if you use it in a tart, you want to julienne that, and don't use too much of it. But with a mixture of goat cheese in a tart shell, and you put that into your tart shell with some figs, slice of figs, put right on top of your tart. And then I think Gwyneth will be very excited to have that as a little dessert.
Mm,
and I could actually do some celery stalks pieces cooked in a syrup of sugar very, very slowly and do like an angelic idea where you just put that on top of your tart as
Tom
a decoration.
Tom is very much nodding his head like that's what I was going to
do.
Yeah,
like
is
Angelica, that kind of candied celery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's super good.
Yeah, it's very delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. Huh.
So
you didn't think I was going to make a dessert with celery, did you? Look, all of you are like, wow. I like that. But lovage is an underutilized product that most people ignore. It's easy to grow. It grows as a big plant in your backyard.
As a weed. Put it in a pot.
No, it doesn't actually spread, but it's definitely a big bush. And it grows up to be very tall, and it's very nice, and it's tasty. Again, very quick cooking.
A little goes a long ways.
Yeah.
Really good. And we didn't even talk about celery leaves, the little baby leaves. From
Ooh,
the
oh,
yeah, for salads. We didn't even make a salad for Gwyneth.
All right. Up next, it's our Taste of the Week. I'm excited to share mine because it's a dish that I don't normally have.
Hmm.
On Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show. We're here at the Hot Stove Society. Thanks for braving the long break we just had. It's always a challenge. More of the 99 reasons to come downtown or stay downtown are up next. I'm Tom Douglas.
I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
We still have a lot of show to go. Farming your own cocktails, our taste of the week. Certainly, the Food for Thought Tasty Trivia is going to round up this hour.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of interesting things to come. So, taste of the week and 99 reasons. So, if you weren't here at the beginning of the show, we did a little group of reasons why you should stay downtown and go to Lulay or
You should just be to see Thierry and Tom.
Yeah, exactly. Or go to one of our joints or any of the restaurants downtown. They're all nervous as could be about nobody coming down during the 99 Via Gloom. So we thought we'd have some fun with it. And we came up in our joints with 99 reasons why you should stay downtown if you're here and go home a little later. Miss the traffic jam.
Mm-hmm. Have dinner first.
So at the Dahlia Bakery, we're offering crash test yummies every day, a little special on our traffic jam cookie and things like that. We've got 99 problems, but a fish ain't one. A little Jay-Z play there. Why not? And if you're looking for a space around town, maybe you should look for some parking tots at C-Town. Oh, Katie's just shaking her head.
so many dad jokes.
And if you're into oysters, you could be gone in 60 seconds with our oyster shooters down at C-Town. Smokey and the Bandit seem to be here. A little smoked salmon dip with potato chips. And shellfish drivers who like to cut in front of you. Oh, no, we didn't say that, did we? Little Salish sea clams or mussels in saffron broth with chorizo, only $8.
Sounds so delicious.
Tons and tons of reasons to come to our joints and hang out during this tragedy that is the loss of the viaduct.
It is sad.
This tragedy. Remember when we talked about making a garden and a park out of that?
Yes.
How cool would that be?
It would be fun. Apparently people didn't want that.
Yeah.
Couldn't get the funds up for it.
All right, Tom. What was your taste of the week? I'm dying to know. You've been teasing it all show long.
Well, I always get beat up on this.
I
got broad shoulders.
Well, I always
get beat up.
How many of you think Tom Douglas gets beat up on the show?
Yeah, exactly.
No one.
Lots of laughing.
I always get beat up about my likes and dislikes.
Yeah,
like my banana
cheese,
split or cottage cheese. Well, I hate chili. I hate chili.
I like that. Can you do that again louder?
What?
What?
But
this feels impossible. We've talked about chili so many times.
I don't mind a meat chili.
Okay.
But I grew up with this dish that my mom made for my dad. It was his favorite dish. It was kind of what it was called, Cincinnati chili noodles. And it was like a can of tomatoes and kind of ground beef that wasn't even bothered to be browned, and onions that, you know, my mom thought a small onion was good for a family of 12. So, you know, I grew up with that kind of chili. And so
You say there was pasta in it too?
Yeah, spaghetti. In Cincinnati, I guess they use spaghetti. Well, anyway,
I've always hated chili. Tom,
Then they put beans in it. That's another good reason to hate it.
Then you make some great Mexican. You open a Mexican restaurant. I mean, you do know what a good chili is, right?
I do.
Okay, so a good chili is a good thing, right?
Shh.
I just want to make sure.
You're ruining my story.
Okay.
Jackie made a chili last night with four different kinds of dried chilies and just a nice chuck roast cooked for 3-4 hours. It was delicious. Had it with bacon-fried cornbread, and it was lovely.
Yeah, that feels bacon like something. Fried, how could you not like that? How could you not like all those delicious
because
things?
Because when you go to the Costco and you get a can of chili, that's not what you get.
Okay.
Okay.
There's a lot of chilies out
just
there.
Just saying.
Feels like a big statement
all right,
to not
your
like
turn.
Chili.
I'm the same way, I think, than chili. Just to stick to the chili. I think it's all about the cooking part of the beans and making a nice stew. Have great chili. That's what makes it.
Yes. What was your taste of the week, Chef?
I had two. I have. We have a new cake at Lule that we I made, whatever you call that. It's an almond, olive, and lemon confit cake, and it's gluten free. There's no flour in it. It's very just nice, light, fluffy, delicious, wet because it's got olive oil in it. And it's. I just think it's a nice little recipe and. It's very delicious because it has no gluten in it. So
sounds
I
lovely.
Always have people looking for no gluten. It is, just in case everybody is not aware, a very serious issue nowadays.
Yeah.
So anyway, just wanted to mention. But the next one is I cooked a 5-pound brisket on Sunday. And, of course, I had lots of leftover between my wife and I. So after a couple of days, Kathy is like, okay, so I don't want to eat that brisket like this anymore. And I go, hey, no, I understand. I'm like, and I was busy. And I said, why don't you make something? So she made it with curry, coconut milk, glazed onions, cumin, coriander, all that stuff. And it was absolutely scrumptious.
So she did eat it again.
Oh, we eat it. We ate it for 4 days in a row.
Wow.
And it was delicious. But the point was, the point of this whole story is kind of like a what's left in your fridge.
Yeah.
How to utilize the product. Obviously, after 2 or 3 meals of eating the same brisket the same way, you're definitely done. But there is still a big piece left, you know, a pounder. So that's another way to use it.
All right, Katie, what was your taste of the week?
Oh, I took a trip to Hello Robin, the little cookie shop that could, on 19th in the Capitol Hill region, and had a meeting. So was meeting about other things, and then Robin, the owner, came out and gave me a huge plate of cookies. I was like, no human can possibly get through this many cookies in one sitting.
Did you?
I made a pretty good dent, I will say. I did a good job. But the real standout for me was just the traditional chocolate chip cookie. It's something that you see at almost all bakeries, but frankly, they do a really good job of it. And it was warm and delicious, and they do a good job of constantly rotating those cookies out. So I would say if you're hankering a cookie, that's a good place to go.
Wow, warm chocolate chip cookie. Mm-hmm. The minute you warm it up, that's it. Everybody's
it's a nice
done.
Place, by the way, to have a meeting. Have a cup of coffee, and it just smells like cookies everywhere. I mean, it's a nice environment.
Do you think there has to be a certain ratio of chocolate to cookie in a chocolate chip cookie? Because I think people go crazy and add too many chocolate chips sometimes.
Yeah, agreed 100%.
Listen, look at all these people nodding their head. Yeah, I think that there is a special ratio because you're not eating a chocolate cookie.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the point. You don't want a chocolate bar. But yeah, I think there's a specific ratio. What's the percentage of chocolate chips you like?
I would say no more than 20% chocolate chips to cookie.
No more than 20%.
That would be my thing.
It's a cookie with little dots of chocolate in it, not chocolate with dots of cookie.
I would say that chocolate chip cookies are much like how people like their eggs prepared, though. Everyone has a very specific way. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
It's just so. Like, some people like crispy edges and a chewy center.
Yes.
Some people like it all chewy. Some people it all crispy. You know? Like, and yeah, you like it. You like all
I just
ways.
Don't like too much chocolate in
you
my chocolate chip cookie.
There you go.
It's okay.
All right.
More doesn't make it better.
Not all the time. Sometimes.
All right. Farming Your Own Cocktails is up next here at Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show. Tom Douglas.
Terry Rotaro, the chef in the hat.
And KDO.
And as you might know, our good friend Brandy Carlisle, which we named a restaurant after, the Carlisle Room, is up for 6 nominations for the Yay! Grammys this year on the 10th of February. Yahoo for Brandy. We're having a free viewer party at the Palace Ballroom. If you want to sign up to get tickets for your free ticket, you got to go to tomdouglas.com. And come join us. We'll have a little food stuff for sale, but it's just a big party to get together for.
When is this?
Celebrate. February 10th. The red carpet starts at 4 o'clock.
Some might argue the most fun part.
Some might.
Some might.
I think it's going to be most fun watching her accept a Grammy.
Mm.
So that's going to be super
Let's
fun.
Let's hope.
All right. I got thinking about Brandy because Belinda is here. Belinda Kelly and Venice Cunningham are here. They are. New to the scene of our show for sure, but I guess you're going to tell us what it is that you do. I see 3 bottles of syrup sitting in front of me, including some beautiful, perky cocktails.
Yes. So we are sisters, and Venice is a farmer. I'm a mobile bar owner in Seattle, and so we started this farm-to-bar concept together for our event cocktails with Happy Camper Cocktails. And our reception that we got in the Seattle area from, you know, thousands of people that have come to our events was just so positive that we decided, okay, after answering the question so many times, how do I make this at home? We're going to need to bottle this so people can actually make this at home. Because what kept happening is I would start to explain and then their eyes would kind of glaze over. And I could tell they are never going to try this. So we did it for them.
Nice. And Venice, was this shocking to you that somebody wanted to take your farm product and do this to it compared to, say, put it in a dinner, in a soup or something like that?
No, because it was my idea.
Oh, really? Well, that's awesome.
Oh, there goes. Not surprising.
So Belinda was getting, actually at her first event, which was super local to us, where the farm is in Buckley, which is, we say, it's below the snow and above the fog. So we're above the Sumner Valley, but below Mount Rainier, really. Mm-hmm. We're right on the foothills of Mount Rainier. And she had her first local event, and everyone was raving over the syrups. And so I thought, let's bottle those and sell those.
Nice.
It took a little bit of convincing for Belinda to take on another project because she had just launched Happy Camper Cocktail Company. But we did. And my farm was originally, so I'm first-generation farmer. We've only been on the farm for 5 years. And we started with heirloom garlic.
Mm-hmm.
So we had built this garlic and goats festival around a garlic field. And then wanted to try something different, and so I thought, let's grow some herbs.
At the same time, I was having a really big sourcing problems with edible flowers, because with my company, I wanted it to be the best cocktail you could have at an event possible, because a lot of times at events, what you get is, you know, a spirit and soda, because you're on location, it's hard to make a good cocktail. So we wanted ours to be a little fancier, and we were doing a lot of weddings, and so we wanted to use edible flowers as garnishes and on rims. Mm-hmm. And while many farmers grow those, they don't really advertise them or sell them. They're growing them, you know, for pollinators. And so I asked Venice, the first thing I asked her to grow was, can you grow me some flowers?
Yeah, so I grew her a bunch of edible flowers and played with a bunch of different ones, what worked in the drinks, what didn't work in the drinks, what stored, what could be transported, and so a lot of them are so delicate, it's really difficult to get them from point A to point B. And then it kind of expanded into, well, we also do herbs in our garnishes, and then it expanded into these syrups.
Fun. Okay, so let's get into the syrups.
Sure. So you guys have a cocktail that we call the Genevieve. One of my friends will be very happy that I just said that on air because it's named after her. And it's a counter gin from Batch 206 Distilling down in Inner Bay. You've got lemon juice and then our rhubarb vanilla simple syrup. Mm-hmm. So the audience has a rhubarb vanilla soda. And we did that one because Sumner, so just down the hill from her farm, is actually the rhubarb pie capital of the world. And a lot of people don't realize that there's 175 acres of rhubarb grown in Washington State, and it's actually one of the biggest states of rhubarb production. So the
Richter
biggest
Farms
state,
is right there, right?
Yes, yeah. They're one of the really big ones. They have a lot of houses and yeah. So we grew this one kind of as an homage to our area. We have a lot of people who are really excited to have this in a cocktail because it's not a typical syrup flavor. And with all of our syrups, that's really what we wanted to do. With the simple syrup business, you see a lot of the same flavors being made over and over again. And there's differences in qualities of those for sure. But we wanted to do flavors we hadn't seen before. And we wanted to do flavors that really reflected the Northwest and our area and our home. So we have a huckleberry spruce tip as well. That one is really special to us because we've been foraging huckleberries in the mountains since we were kids. And spruce tip is one of those ingredients that, you know, people don't see a lot if they're not, you know, going to fine dining or, you know, trying fancy cocktails. So that one's fun. The spruce tip is going to add the natural citrus element to pair with kind of the tart sweetness of the huckleberry. The rhubarb vanilla, again, tart sweet with rhubarb, and then a sweet finish with the vanilla. And then with Marionberry mint, that one was just, you know, Marionberries are not native here, but they grow like crazy. And so it's kind of one of those adopted Seattle or Washingtonian products for us. And mint grows like crazy on our farm. So we just thought, let's pair those together for the best mojito you've ever had. So with all of our flavors, and we're still coming up with new seasonal flavors, it's all about, you know, what's seasonal and what's local and what is a unique perspective.
It's also a really exciting way to think about even non-alcoholic beverages. I know, you know, LaCroix is so hot and popular, and there's plenty of other beverages out there kind of that ilk. But to have something that is a bit more specialized, that's a bit more special just in general with different flavorings is pretty cool.
Yeah, we actually just did an event for National Mocktail Week, and it's the first ever National Mocktail Week. A Gig Harbor woman named Marnie Ray actually started it, and we just did an event with them, and we've been really impressed and excited by how welcome we've been by the sober community. And for people who might not be, like, sober forever, but...
You call it the sober community?
Yeah, it's a thing.
Wait,
it's
definitely... I'm not always drunk, but I drink.
But for people who can't or choose not to for any reason, there's a big feeling of being left out of the party. And right, so yeah, if you can, have an inclusive brand, you know, that really provides something special for them. We were both sober for 9 months during our pregnancies, and man, you get really tired of club soda or tonic, you know.
We actually launched the product when I was pregnant, and so it was all the taste testing, but without the alcohol to kind of feel that finish. And so everything that we wanted in our bottle, we wanted it to be able to be shared by everyone. Our kids drink the heck out of the rhubarb vanilla. Is their absolute favorite.
Is it?
Yes.
Cool. So the name of the brand is called Simple Goodness Syrups. You did mention a few of the flavors. Huckleberry Spruce Tip. There's... Katie, can you read those there?
Marionberry Mint as well.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's right. She just mentioned all of those. It's really an awesome thing. You know, from our perspective, Chef, I'm not sure how you would look at it, but we're always about working with farmers and showing off their food in our entrees.
Well, plus
it's nice to see it in the bar,
using the local fresh product that's available everywhere. I mean, those berries are everywhere. There's no reason why not. You know, it's like we have forgotten them. That's the way it used to be. We got away from that. Everything was made in a factory somewhere else. And then now we're going back to that, which I think is very cool. Keep leading that
Absolutely.
Flag.
Thank you. Yeah, there's a lot of sustainability involved too, which I know is big for both of you guys and your restaurants. When you take our product, it gets boiled. And so those berries don't need to look pretty.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we actually end up taking a lot of berries and other products that can't be sold on a
Number
shelf.
Number twos.
Yeah, and we get to
And are you
going to
get
a new home,
vegetable next?
We do a beet shrub that's been very popular at events. And, you know, we kind of launched as a test to the market, and now it's had this great response. So now we're rolling out our next flavors. We're trying to get margins down. We're figuring out distribution. We're doing all those things that a new food business has to do.
Yes,
all
the right. business stuff.
Yeah.
The business stuff. Belinda Kelly of Happy Camper Cocktail Company, a Garden to Glass mobile bar, and Venice Cunningham, a farmer from...
Buckley, Washington.
We're here with the Simple Goodness Syrups. Thank you for joining us. Up next, we're going to jump into the Baker's Corner with Sarah Leibovitz leading this segment. On Cover Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen. It's the Cairo Radio Food-a-thon. every week here on Saturday and Sunday, 2 hours each day, sometimes even more on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. Sarah Leibovitz, our producer. Karen, apparently, you're not assistant anymore, but you're the producer now.
I'm not.
Lead
Real deal.
Producer.
Yes.
You are going to jump over with Brittany Bartleben for our Baker's Corner today.
That's right. Usually we bring Brittany over here to talk about home baking and her advice on that. So I figured let's go into her territory and learn more about kind of a day in the life of a professional baker.
What do you perceive it to be? Just sweets and fantasy all day long?
Busy.
Or do you think it's going to be hard work?
Are you going to bake a cake?
We'll find out.
We'll find out. All right, let's listen in.
I think most people imagine owning a bakery at some point. Not as like an actual achievable goal with like steps and all that, but just as a kind of dream. Like when you give up the hustle and bustle of the 9-to-5 corporate world and leave it all behind to bake cookies all day and be cozy. I've definitely done it. It's a great dream. It's also completely fictional.
I mean, you're gonna have to start your day very early. Depending on time you open, we open at 7, so that would mean probably starting at 5:30, depending on what your product line is. If you have laminated or yeasted doughs, you need to start even earlier because you need to let those items proof and come to room temp. And then you're probably doing all of the morning bake, which can take a couple of hours, have it all ready when you open. And then I'm assuming you're imagining in this scenario, you've got at least a counter staff. and then you're probably just baking all day long, and you're probably looking at long shifts if you don't have staff. I always said from the get-go, I don't want to own my own place. I want somebody else to own it and pay the bills, and I will manage it.
Thankfully, the Dahlia Bakery doesn't actually have a staff of one, so Brittany's days start out a little differently from that.
Usually first thing I do when I get here is just check in with my team and assess the list for the day, which for the most part has already been made. This morning, for instance, the first thing I did was code invoices and then put together a Merlino's order. So it's a lot of like admin work. It doesn't take a lot of time, but that's usually where I start my day. And then I do what we call the Dahlia transfer, which means I shift my attention to the Dahlia lounge desserts, see what they're going to need for the day, and then I start prepping their desserts. I'm pretty much the only one that does the desserts for the lounge while my staff really focuses on the bakery. I spend about the middle of the day working on the Dahlia lounge desserts. And then once that is through, I get to either shift to working on the list with the rest of the team, which was what you saw me doing with the crostatas, or recipe development, or whatever marketing event is coming up, or this time of year, it's working on Valentine's Day. And I usually work on that until, like, 6. And then that's when I start to unwind, head up to the office, make the changes for the day, which means I go through and adjust what was actually ordered versus what we actually gave them. So maybe we broke 2 cookies, and so I then need to credit the bakery for 2 cookies. Doesn't take long, but that's sort of my unwind, answer emails. Today I have to finish my online safety training, just little admin things like that. So
it's not like the dream. Really, I think it's more like juggling. Like there are 12 different balls in the air, making everything in the morning, having dough ready to go in advance. Who's on breakfast sandwiches? Who's at the counter? Even when I get to the bakery, Brittany's not just talking to me. She's also making crostatas. She doesn't stop when she's talking because she doesn't need to. She can keep making them while also explaining what they are and looking for the next one and so on and so forth without any pause.
These are our quince and apple fruit crostatas. We always have a seasonal fruit crostata in the bakery. It's one of my favorites. There's a little bit of a layer of marzipan at the bottom of these. I am a huge fan of marzipan. So yeah, what we're doing is just getting these all formed out so that in the morning we can just pop them in the oven.
And what's the difference between like a crostata and a pie?
A crostata typically doesn't have a top crust, which a pie does. But other than that, it's pretty much pie. It's a fancy word for pie.
So how long does it take to make a crostata and how many do you make in a day?
We form out like 20 of them and keep them in the freezer and then pop them out in the morning and bake them off. Start to finish, like these two trays of 20, is going to take me about, I guess it's taken me about 20 minutes. Granted, I'm a little faster at these. We sell usually not many, like 8 of them. But, you know, we're a little bakery.
Everyone seems to be able to multitask like an expert. More than that, everything's already been thought out. Like, every ball that they're juggling has already been decided on and placed in the right spot before it's even thrown in the air.
So, we make our dough in-house. Have that all ready to go. We have all the mise en place, I guess you would call it. We have all those ready to go in pieces. All of the building blocks need to be done in advance, and I would say that's typical of any recipe that we work with. We try and always have our mise en place ready to go.
Are there any of the recipes here that you can't kind of do that for?
Yeah, our chocolate truffle cookie, which is really, really popular, that has to be made fresh every morning. You can't make the batter in advance. That's just got to start from scratch every day.
It's even more apparent that that's the case when Brittany leads me to their walk-in fridge.
So this is where we prep all of our morning bake stuff. Eclair glaze, vanilla mascarpone, which we make by the boatload because that goes with our Dahlia donuts. We've got cocoa pie filling here. This is the pastry cream for our eclairs. We've got all of our dairy and the world famous creme caramel here. It's a little bit sparse in here right now, just because we're not in the middle of fruit season or Prosser season. If you were to come in here in August, it'd just be towers of Prosser bins and all sorts of stone fruit and everything. But right now we just have some apples, which is kind of that peaceful January time. Yeah. And then here we have our, we call it the pull, all the items that we have prepped for the next day. For the morning bake, that they can just roll this out and start throwing things in the oven. So we know that they have ordered 15 fig bars. So those are all pulled and ready to go. There's no counting. And this takes about a half hour to actually put together. So it definitely has to be done the day before. The muffins are scooped here. So it's this gluten-free cornmeal muffin that Tina loves so much. That's all just prepped and ready to get baked off. We sell cake slabs, that's what we call them, cake slabs in the bakery, where it's just a big, huge, dirty slice of cake that we just make a big sheet cake, and it actually flies out of here. It doesn't look beautiful right now, but it doesn't have to because it gets sliced. And then we have butter that we cut ahead of time for our biscuits so that everything, the flour for those is in the freezer, so everything's just ready to go. Pop it in the mixer and let it do its thing. So as you can see, there's a theme where there's a lot of prep ahead that has to be done. Therefore, my staff doesn't have to come in at 4 o'clock in the morning, and we're more efficient.
And then there's the Dahlia restaurant attached to the bakery and also run by Brittany. While she and her staff juggle everything at the bakery, she's also going through everything they'll need for the day at the restaurant and making those too.
So there's 3 menu items that I cannot touch, meaning I can't change them or adjust them in any way, and that is the coconut cream pie, the creme caramel, and the donuts. But the rest of the menu is mine to do with whatever I want. And right now I have 3 items plus a frozen menu. So I change that. I try to do it a couple of times a month with the seasons. With January, with there not being a lot of fruit, not a lot of business this time of year, I try and keep it a little bit more sparse. But That's pretty much it. The world's pretty much my oyster with those 3 dessert menu items.
Nice. And yeah. Those also all get made in advance and then just baked to order?
It sort of depends on the product. So, for instance, we've got bread pudding on the menu. We can bake the brioche in advance and make the what we call little brioche croutons and then keep those in the freezer and make the custard for that in advance. So that way, in the morning, it's just a matter of pulling your croutons, combining it with the ratio of custard that you need, and then letting it sit, and then baking it off. So it's still a freshly baked, delicious dessert, but I'm not coming in at 2 o'clock in the morning to make brioche or things like that. So there's building blocks that we have, but everything for the most part is still fresh day of.
When Tom asked me what I thought working in a bakery was like, I said busy. And I think I was right. It's definitely not the hazy, quiet bakery of my imagination. But it's also not as stressful as I imagined. I think I was picturing like a cooking reality TV show with people like yelling and worried about everything not getting done on time and all that kind of stuff. And obviously none of that was going on. Really, everything just seemed so well organized. It's like a machine with every part running together, prepping things for tomorrow, pulling out the right stuff to bake, and all the other stuff. Like any other job should be. So maybe not really a good example of a retirement dream job. But not a nightmare either. Coming up on Seattle Kitchen, we're diving into the Tasty Trivia Challenge on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia in the Seattle Kitchen. I'm excited to play today because KDO is going to play.
That's true. I am going to play, and that means Tina Knoll, our producer, is going to administer the quiz. Tina?
All right, you guys. Here's how this game is played. Everybody gets 5 questions. If you get the most correct, you're the winner. If you get the least correct, you are the loser, and you will need to give something away to a faithful listener to our program. Today, you're playing for Kathy, who happens to be in our audience today, and it is her birthday.
Yay! Yay!
Happy birthday, Kathy!
Happy birthday, Kathy!
Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday to you!
Happy birthday, dear Kathy!
Happy birthday to you!
All right.
Now get out of here.
Live on the air on Cairo. Look at you.
All right. So, Katie, if you should lose this quiz, what will you give to Kathy?
Well, Molly Moons has a new 14-flavor flight. It's all the ice creams.
14 flavors?
You get to try all of them. So, for your birthday, we'll put on some whipped cream. We'll put on some sprinkles. You can bring a friend. Have a big old flight of ice cream.
Nice.
Nice.
Chef Thierry Rochereau, should you lose the quiz, what will you give away to
Have you
Ms.
been
Kathy?
To Luc? Okay, here you go. Brunch for two at Luc.
Chef Tom Douglas, what will you give away to Kathy, should you lose?
To Kathy, I will give away, down in the Pike Place Market, we have a few restaurants called Etta's, Sea Town, and the Rub Shack, just on the north end of the Pike Place Market. You can pick any of those up and have a $100 gift card to your choice.
Hello.
Because it's really nice this time of year to go down and support the farmers in the market because it's quiet down there.
Yes, they need your help right now.
Quiet down there.
Favorite time of the year.
Yeah, so.
Lovely. All right, those are some pretty awesome prizes for Miss Kathy. Who wants to go first?
I'll go.
Okay, Katie.
I'll go, Thierry.
Go ahead.
All right, Miss Katie, your first question. To MNC is to what? Cube, roughly chop, or thinly slice?
I'm going to say cube.
Nope.
Answer is, well.
Whoa, that was a...
Thierry.
That was an in-your-face right
someone's
there.
Someone's very competitive today.
What is it, fancy Chef Thierry?
Thinly slice.
Thinly slice. Yeah, okay,
he's right. All right. All right, Katie, question number 2. If you see aloo on the menu at an Indian restaurant, what is it? Is it carrot, spinach, or potato?
Oh, you know, I don't eat a lot of Indian food.
Do you want me to spell that one?
Nope. A-L-O-O. I knew that one. I think it's potato.
Yes.
Correct. Potato?
Nice.
Okay.
Katie, good job. Question number 3. What country does Gorgonzola cheese come from? Is it France, Italy, or Spain?
Italian?
Yes. Nicely done. That's 2 correct and 1 incorrect, Katie. That's
okay.
A great showing so far. What is the primary ingredient of arrocini?
The primary ingredient is risotto or rice.
Correct. Nicely done. Pastis de nata. De nata are a sweet pastry treat originally from where? Spain, Portugal, or Brazil?
I don't know the answer to this, so I'm going to guess that it is... Portugal!
Nicely done, Katie. That is 4 out of 5 correct for you.
I don't know how Portuguese pastry.
That was a lackluster bomb right there. I can't believe how many of those you guessed on and you got them right.
All right, Chef Thierry, are you ready?
Oh, no, all right, I'm ready. Second this time.
Oh,
we're
Chef
Tala.
Wow. Changing it up. Yeah. All right, well, I'll pull out the harder questions then.
That's funny. Oh, change the paper.
Just shuffling over here.
Tom, 4 is the number to beat right now. Your first question, roughly.
Kathy, would you like a $25 gift card to the gift shop for your birthday to help me out here?
Or get on the mic, Kathy.
All right,
get
come on
the
up
mic.
Here. Come on up here.
Oh, or, hey.
I feel the need. I feel the need to cheat today.
I'll give you 50 for not helping him.
Oh. Your choice,
Kathy. I'm just kidding. I'm teasing.
For throwing it?
I just love that.
All right. I felt the need to cheat today because Katie guessed and got everything.
Yeah, 4 out of 5. This is high competition here.
All right. Come on over here. Happy birthday. Here, talk to the mic.
Unfortunately, it's a big one.
Oh. What, 30?
Yeah. That's a good number.
All right.
All right, Kathy and team Kathy and Tom, your question number one. Roughly what percentage of a watermelon is water? Is it 92, 96, or 85%?
Mm. Well, I'll go with
my
you.
Gut says 85, but I think I'm going to go with 92 in the middle.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
That's correct, 92.
Nice. Yeah, Kathy!
All right, question number two. What is
and
another?
I have quite a gut.
What is another name for star fruit?
I was thinking like Kambola or Kambazola or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Kambola.
Carambola. Yeah.
Carambola.
Good job.
Oh, thank God.
Nice. Yes.
That one. All right, that's 2 for 2. Good job, you guys. Frenching is the process of what? Adding cream, wrapping pastry, or cleaning bones of fat and meat? Frenching.
Wrapping meat?
Yes, cleaning bones from fat. Nicely done, you guys.
Nice job, Kat.
Nice job.
Wow. What is the national dish of Greece? Moussaka? Gyros? Is it gyros or gyros in Greece?
Gyros, I think. I don't know.
Domates. Which one?
Well,
Kathy's looking to you, Tom.
I think domates is more of a appetizer, and I think this sounds like more of an entree. Right. So I'm going to go with moussaka.
That was my first choice.
Yeah.
All right. That's 4 for 4. You two.
Yeah.
Guys, wow. All right. For a perfect score, Kathy and Tom, what is the world's largest citrus fruit? Is it grapefruit, Jamaican tangelo, or pomelo?
Pomelo.
Yeah.
Oh,
you go.
Wow. 5 out of 5. It pays to cheat.
Wow. Wow.
Wow.
Teary.
Wow. Kathy gets an extra $25 in the gift shop today.
Nice.
Thank you, Kathy. I'm feeling very proud of ourselves.
Nicely
good job.
Teary having to pull up the rear is a little bit tricky today.
All right. True or false, your first question. Apples are just as effective as coffee at waking you up in the morning. Is that true or false?
I'm going to say as effective, yes.
Correct. Nice.
Sugar amount in there is so high that...
All right, question number two for you. What is eaten traditionally in the UK the day before Ash Wednesday? Is it pancakes, ham, or cake?
Pancakes.
Correct. All right, chef, question number three. If you were having a cocktail of cognac, orange liqueur, and lemon juice, what would it be called? You have some options.
Oh, good.
A sidecar, a woo-woo, or a Harvey Wallbanger?
I'm going to go with a sidecar.
Correct. All right, chef... Thierry Rotereau, your next question. Rhapsody, Aramel, Tamela, and Cambridge are types of what? Strawberries, mushrooms, or apples?
I'm going to go with apple.
Oh, no. The answer is strawberry.
Man, that was the other answer. I just didn't want to give that one.
You'll need to get this one right in order to tie with Miss Katie O.
Pressure is on.
All right, chef. A cut of meat known as beef clod would come from which part of the animal? Is this the shoulder, the back, or the hind quarters?
Sounds like a hoof.
I look at Tom because he knows all his pieces of meat.
I do know that one.
I'm going to go with the neck. Did you say
the
neck?
It's not even an option. Go rogue.
That wasn't an answer. How about the ears? No, that wasn't an answer either.
Do you want your options again?
Yes, please.
Shoulder, back, or hindquarters? Clearly you know this one.
I do know the answer to that one, absolutely.
The neck.
I'm going to go with the shoulder.
Don't sit on it.
It is the shoulder.
See?
It is the shoulder.
I was close to the
neck.
All
right, do we have a question off? I'll give you one more.
Okay.
You guys want it?
All right,
since you've tied. All right, you two. What type of meat is scrag end? Teary.
Mutton.
Nicely done.
Yay. Happy birthday, Kathy. You are getting some Molly Moon ice cream from Miss Katie O.
That's
if
right.
You want to be part of our show, you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by Large Media. That's LARJ Media. Our lead producer is Sarah Leibovitz, and our sound engineer is Sean, don't call me Del Torre. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $15. It comes with breakfast. Remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.